First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 7. Now we shall begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, because you will not hear the recording a second time. Listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 7.
Hello, can I speak to... the advert doesn't give a name.
Well, the name is Bob, and I guess this call is about the car I'm selling, right?
Yes, my name's Francis, and I'm definitely interested.
You'll like my car, then. Clean, neat, nice.
What sort is it?
Oh, the original model was called an Echo. You know, like the Echo a sound can make. But then they changed the name to Yaris, just before I bought it. Yaris. I don't know why. I liked the old name, and it's the same car, but that's what it's called.
So, what's the colour? The ad says it's cream-coloured. Like cream, then?
Yeah, well, it's more of a yellow colour, actually.
Not cream?
No, I don't know why I said that. It's like a canary, and small like one, too.
So, what about the power? How many cylinders does it have? 4 or 6? My brother has a 6-cylinder car and says it's very powerful.
Well, this one's 4 only, but I find it fine for city driving. As long as you don't intend to drive this car interstate or across the country, it does the job fine.
That's okay. I just want the car basically for commuting to work and maybe some weekend trips. Is it 2-door or 4-door? I suppose it's not 4-door. The car's too small for that, right?
Right. Just 2 doors, as you say. The front seat bends forward to allow entry into the rear.
That's fine by me. This car is just for my girlfriend and I anyway. What about accessories? Radio, CD player, anything else? Does it have an air conditioner?
Well, no, it doesn't, but I don't find that a problem. I just open the window. I mean, if you really want, you can pay to have an AC installed. Basically, the only additional feature this car has is a radio, but it's still a great deal.
That depends on the price. You say you want $12,800, right?
Yep, about that.
Well, obviously you expect the price to be reduced to an even figure, right?
Well, I don't know.
$12,000.
$12,500, maybe.
If you can lower it a bit, I'll come and have a look, okay?
Okay. Let's say $12,400. But I won't lower it any more than that. Certainly not to $12,000.
Well, if I can get that better price, I may come over this afternoon. But what year is this car? How old is it? My brother's got a 12-year-old car, and it's showing problems.
Well, my car was brand new only 3 years ago, but it still looks like it's only been 1 year on the road.
Okay, that sounds good.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 8 to 10. Now listen and answer questions 8 to 10.
Can I just ask a few more general questions about this car you're selling?
Sure.
Can you just tell me why you think it's such a good deal? Of course, I won't necessarily believe you, but just tell me what you think.
You can believe me. I honestly think this is a nice car, well worth buying at the price I'm asking.
How much registration does it have left?
To be honest, not so much, but I think having lots of registration is irrelevant. It's the car you're paying for, the quality and advantages of the engine itself.
Well, what about that then?
Okay, many people like to accelerate down the freeways, right? There are a lot of speed demons out there who think quickness is all that matters. But basically, people are mostly trapped in city traffic. So one of the things I like is that because this car is small, you can put it anywhere. Say you're in the city wanting to duck into a shop. Well, you can fit this car in any little space while you go shopping or do other things, and that saves you a lot of time.
Yeah, but it's not that powerful, right?
Oh, sure. The feel of a smoothly purring six-cylinder engine attracts many people, but I compare my car to those small football players with the tight turning circles, those who can run rings around the larger players. This car is like that. It can turn this way and that way, dodge here, duck in there, sneak around corners, squeeze ahead, and grab a position. That's also very useful when travelling in city traffic.
Okay, I'll think about it.
Sure, think about it. But all these advantages are sound and appeal to other buyers as well. No one holds the same car forever, so you can say exactly the same things that I just said when you want to sell the car. That will make it very easy for you to pass this car on to the next buyer.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
That is the end of part one.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part two.
Part two.
You will hear a speech given by the head of a company to some new employees. You have 30 seconds to look at questions 11 to 16.
First of all, a warm welcome to Barker's Country Safaris. We're delighted to have you all on board for this season. I know you've all been told a bit about the company when you had your job interview, but I thought it would be worth telling you a bit more about ourselves. Barker's was set up 10 years ago by myself, John, and my then girlfriend and now wife, Nancy. We started it initially just as a hobby. We felt that there was a good opportunity to share our love of the countryside in this part of the world with the many visitors who come here. As you know, most people come for the beaches in the summer, but there is so much more to the region, and this is what we wanted to exploit. Nancy and I were born near here, and as teenagers we went climbing, kayaking, whitewater rafting, potholing, and just straightforward walking. This district is in our blood, and we love it. While we were still at university, we started taking small groups of visitors out into the national park in Nancy's brother's old Land Rover. We'd drive them around the back lanes and into the forest. We'd also organise rock climbing tours for friends of friends. Then, each year, without us having to advertise, people came back to us to ask for more excursions and trips. So, 5 years ago, we gave up our other jobs to focus full-time on Barker's Country Safaris. Now, 2 years after that, we set up the activity tour part of the business, and 1 year ago, we expanded into organising activities for school groups during term time. Obviously, this was a massive challenge with all the health and safety requirements, but it's proving a great success.
You now have 30 seconds to look at questions 17 to 20.
Anyway, we'll certainly not be dealing with school parties during the summer holidays. Our clients for the next 3 months are mostly family parties or groups of friends, and I'd like to talk a bit now about the tours we offer and what your responsibilities will be. Our most popular excursion is the Woodland Tour and Trail. Now, often this is sold out and we have all of our 10 jeeps in convoy with 8 people in each jeep. It's a lot of fun. These tours really offer a taster of what we can provide. So as both driver and guide, it is important that you do a good job here so they come back for the bigger tours. I will talk about the commission package later. As the summer days are so long, we have 3 tours each day, but you will not be expected to work on more than 2 of them. Morning tours start at 8 a.m. and go to midday. Afternoon tours are from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. and then evening ones 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. All the tours follow the same route, and you should have made yourselves familiar with all the key information. This was provided to you in the information pack you were sent when you accepted the job offer. This is important, so if you haven't had time yet, please do so now. Our second most popular tour is the Family Exclusive. Now, this tour is for the whole day and for only one group. Usually it is just one jeep, but sometimes there are 2 if the party is large. These tours go from 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. and include lunch at the Brown Bear in Lower Middleton. We have a number of different routes for these tours, as we don't want our premium clients being made to feel that they are part of a large package deal. You'll be told which route to take with your weekly schedule. Now, I'd like to move on to these specialty tour packages. These are the ones that we are keen to book people on once they've done the Woodland Tour and Trail trip.
That is the end of part 2.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part 3.
Part 3.
You will hear a conversation about tea between an expert and a reporter. You have 30 seconds to look at questions 21 to 24.
Hi, Jacob. Thank you so much for coming along today.
It's my pleasure. I'm very intrigued about what a tea meditation entails exactly.
Well, it's very simple, really. I think the first thing you need to keep in mind is that it is mostly about leaving everything that you have been thinking or worrying about today to one side. Really focus on the present moment.
Oh, it sounds great. I certainly don't know very much about tea, and I'm keen to get started. But before you go into more detail, can I ask you what your favourite kind of tea is?
Well, I think the kind of tea we are going to have today is my favourite. It is Pu'er tea from Yunnan province in southern China.
What makes this tea special?
Pu'er is a dark tea. The regions of Yunnan, the north of Vietnam and Laos, have one of the best climates for growing tea in the world. Pu'er is a post-fermented tea.
Oh, what is a post-fermented tea exactly?
It is a tea that has undergone a period of aging in the open air. They age the tea for days, even years. The exposure to humidity and oxygen help to oxidize the tea leaves and encourage fermentation. This changes the smell of the tea and also removes a lot of bitterness from the taste.
it sounds similar to the process of aging wine.
The process is different, but the effect of aging on the taste is certainly similar.
Does this mean the tea can be quite expensive?
Absolutely. It can be very expensive. The tea is usually pressed into balls or cakes and sold. At one time, only tea enthusiasts cared about buying these cakes, but now many people have realized that they are an investment, and so buy them like they would buy gold, because the price goes up a lot over time.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 25 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 25 to 30.
So now I want you to focus on clearing your mind of anything other than this present moment. Let go of any concerns.
Okay, one slight problem. I will need to record our conversation and I will need to take notes for the article. I plan to write about this for my newspaper. Is that okay?
Oh, yes, of course. Whatever you need.
Thank you. I'll try to keep my notes to a minimum.
Good. So, where was I? Oh, yes, I think very few people really appreciate the complexity and variety of tea that exists in the world.
Right. Most people are maybe like me and just use tea bags.
Exactly. And with a tea bag, the tea is trapped inside and cannot move around freely. You can really taste the difference drinking a brewed tea that was free to move around through all the water.
So, do you ever use tea bags?
Never. There are many different kinds of tea. White, yellow, black, green, oolong, matcha, herbal and many others. Each one has its own unique properties. To fully experience what each tea has to offer, you must brew it in the correct way. I also believe in only drinking tea that is picked and sorted by hand, rather than using mechanical processes. Although it takes more time, the tea made by hand is so much better that it leads to an increase in the tea's sales.
But in that case, surely if there is more interest in the tea, and with the time-intensive farming process, this means there could be shortages because the demand is higher than the ability to produce it.
There were shortages for a while, but then an artificial fermentation process was developed in the 1970s, which helped to speed up the fermentation times. As I mentioned, this process has an aging effect on the taste of pu'er tea that is very similar to the effect on the taste of wine that you get from that fermentation process, though for pu'er tea today, we're talking about that artificial process.
How can they do this artificially?
The farmers gather the tea leaves into a big pile, then cover it with a large sheet or tarp. They spray water on the tea every now and then, and therefore fermentation happens faster. Usually the tea is left for 30, 45, 60 or even 90 days still. The farmer will check the tea every few days, and just by the feel of the tea, he knows whether it is ready or if it needs more time.
Wow. That sounds like a fascinating process. I never realised that there was such a science behind producing tea.
Well, now you are ready for the best part, the tasting of it.
That sounds like a very good idea to me.
So what I will do now is boil the water and we can begin our meditation.
What does that entail?
We need to focus on only two things. The first is your mind and body. Forget everything that you have been worrying about today. Forget about what you have to do later on or what somebody said to you earlier. Focus on your breathing and on how your body feels. If you have aches and pains, acknowledge them. Pinpoint where there is tension in your body and try to release it.
Oh, yes, I can really feel tension in my shoulders.
Let it go. Close your eyes if that helps. Take deep breaths in and out. Soon, we will drink the tea. When you drink it, Think about the taste and how it feels on your tongue. Is it easy to swallow the tea, or do you need to gulp it?
Can you brew the tea leaves more than once?
Oh yes, you can brew some teas more than 10 times. Now we will shift to noble silence, focusing only on ourselves and the tea. Enjoy.
That is the end of part 3.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part 4.
Part 4.
You will hear a biology lecture about tubularia.
First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 40.
Hello, everyone. I'm glad so many people have shown up here today to hear about these fascinating little creatures called the tubularia. My name is Dr. Baker, and I've spent 20 years researching thousands of different species of platyhelminths, what are commonly known as flatworms, both free-living and parasitic. So there are a lot of things I could tell you about these extremely interesting invertebrate, but I will try to keep it short. Tubularia are unique amongst flatworms in three ways. The first one is that, unlike 80% of all platyhelminths, tubularia do not need to secure nourishment from a living source. This means that they do not generally parasitize a host, but are instead found living freely in the environment. So, no need to worry about any of these little samples I've got here escaping and causing havoc. The second way in which they're different is that they are, well, they're incredibly simple. And by simple, I don't mean in terms of structure, as their structure is indeed quite complex, and I'll get to that later. By simple, I mean that they're not the brightest bulbs in the box. Flatworms in general are not known for their cognitive abilities, especially when compared with other invertebrates such as cuttlefish or octopuses or even insects. But amongst flatworms, tubularia are by far the most primitive of the bunch. Finally, and this is a direct result of the first thing I mentioned, tubularia tend to have a much more complicated sensory system in their head region. This includes a set of eyes with receptors that can detect light, as well as chemical sensory organs that assist tubularia in locating food. Obviously, as other flatworms receive nutrition directly from their host, they have no need for this. Despite these three differences, however, tubularia are quite similar to other flatworms in all sorts of other ways. First of all, as their name suggests, they're incredibly flat, which allows them to hide under stones. They're symmetrical on both sides, and they don't have a body cavity. They also don't have any specialized respiratory, skeletal, and circulatory systems. What they do have, however, and this is what I meant when I referenced their structure before, is three layers known as the endoderm, the mesoderm, and the ectoderm, as well as a head region where their brain and sense organs are located, and a spongy connective tissue that fills all the space between their organs. Finally, like most species of flatworms, they're hermaphrodites. This means that a single flatworm has a set of each gender. But don't take this to mean they reproduce alone. Their preferred method of reproduction is called cross-fertilization, which means that each flatworm fertilizes the other. I mentioned before that most flatworms need a host, but Turbellaria feed from the environment. So what do they feed on? Most Turbellaria can be found either in fresh or salt water, and they feed on small insects, microscopic matter, and crustaceans. They will pretty much eat anything they find. They have no preference on whether their food is living or dead. Also, and this is the most remarkable part about their eating habits, if they ever find themselves in a situation where food is scarce, they might also feed on themselves. That's right, they'll start eating their own body, starting with the least essential muscles and organs and working their way up. They will shrink in size until they're able to find food again, at which point they'll begin to regenerate everything they've lost. One final thing about food, and apologies in advance if I disgust you, Turbellaria don't possess an anus, which means that their mouth, which is a muscular opening on the underside of their body, has to serve as one. Before I finish this presentation, one more thing you've probably heard before but weren't sure if it was a myth or not. I mentioned already that Turbellaria can reproduce on their own, but there's a second method they can use, which is known as fission. Now, as a child, you were probably told that if you cut a worm in half, it will grow into two new worms. That's not entirely true, but flatworms are not worms exactly, and they do have the ability to regenerate by splitting into two, perhaps even more smaller parts, at which point each part regrows the missing organs and becomes a brand new Turbellarian. Now, this is extremely important for us, and this is how I'd like to close this presentation. Because their ability to regenerate endlessly makes them virtually immortal, and it might open pathways to regeneration in human cells or slowing the human aging process, which is why scientists like myself have been studying these unique creatures, hoping to get some answers. Thank you for listening, and please come along to see me and my samples if you have any further questions.
That is the end of part 4.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.